This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 1205. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. I'm Jim Gutis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. Wet snow and sleet for a while in the far northern suburbs, but little or no accumulation here in the city. A high of 42 today, right now 40 degrees.
Let's see what's happening on the markets as we go live to Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
Jim and Chris, we are narrowly mixed. The Dow is down 24 points, or less than a tenth of a percent, and NASDAQ is up 32 points, the S&P adding 5. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is gaining two-thirds of a percent. Our best local performer is Schaumburg-based Global Brass and Copper. That stock soaring more than 25% today on the news. It's being acquired by Weiling Group, which is based in Germany. Inflation remains generally contained despite rising labor costs. Consumer prices rose four-tenths of a percent in March, led by food and energy costs. But beneath the headline, core CPI is showing little change. That reinforces the Federal Reserve's message of patience on further interest rate hikes. We'll hear from central bankers in just about an hour as the Fed concludes a policy meeting. We'll keep you posted there. No changes are expected. And OPEC production cuts are taking hold, even as the situation in Venezuela further cramps supply. Crude futures are on the rise, up more than 1% to $64.65 a barrel. Back to you, Jim and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. Among our topics today, the tax refund can be seen as a financial bonus, but investing or saving instead of spending it can provide a real boost to your bottom line. We're going to be covering that in the next segment.
On Personal Finance Wednesday, we're going to talk more about saving and ways that you can save more. And cashless stores, it's become increasingly popular, but Amazon Go has decided to start taking cash, and we'll talk about why. That's all ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A tax refund can be seen as a financial bonus, but investing or saving instead of spending it can provide a real boost to your bottom line. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, the Consumer Price Index, a key measure of inflation, tops today's data. Also, the minutes of the Fed's recent policy meeting will be out next hour. And we're joined by Carl Riccadonna, the chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg in New York. So, Carl, tell us what we should be looking for in all these numbers today.
Sure. Well, first of all, this morning we saw the March Consumer Price Index, one of the most widely followed measures of inflation in the economy, and we didn't see a lot of price pressures. In fact, if we look at overall inflation, it's only running at about 1.9%. The Fed would like to see slightly higher inflation than that, but we do appear to be recovering from a bit of a soft patch around the end of last year and the early part of this year. And so our expectation is that we will see price pressures get a little bit firmer as the year wears on. Just in the details of that report, two big swing factors I'll highlight. So one, gasoline prices are moving sharply higher in the first couple months of this year. That means $4 a gallon gasoline is most likely going to be a reality for the summer driving season. The other interesting detail in the report was apparel prices showed the sharpest monthly decline of any month going all the way back to the late 1940s. So seems to be something very quirky in those details. The other thing you had asked about was the Fed minutes, which are coming up within the hour here. And what we'll be watching for there is to see, we've had a bit of a flurry of negative economic news over the last couple of months, a wobble in the hiring statistics. Factory output has been a little bit on the sluggish side. Retail sales have disappointed. And so what we'll be looking for in the minutes is to see if Fed officials view this as a sustained slowdown in the economy, or if they really think of this as transitory developments that maybe can be explained away, or at the very least will not be long-lasting, and therefore the implication would be that they're expecting the economy to perk up later on in the first half, or at least in the latter portion of this year.
And do you join them in that anticipation?
I do think that much of the weakness we saw over the past couple of months was due to temporary factors. So folks are finding smaller refund checks when they file their taxes this year. They're finding their 401ks have turned into 201ks following the correction in the market in the Q4 period. There was a bit of a psychological impact on consumer spending from that market correction, as well as business investment. So lots of just temporary factors seem to be coming together for the perfect storm, but that perfect storm is something that will not be enduring. And so we do think economic fundamentals are very sound. The unemployment rate is the lowest it's been since the draft for the Vietnam War, and consumer spending is on a pretty firm footing. Even though we had a wobble at the start of the year, the income growth is there, and that means if the income growth is there, eventually the spending will follow suit.
And where do we find the president's trade war events? Where is he going with that?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So I've seen some academic literature recently suggesting that consumers are bearing the brunt of the trade war in 2018. And when we look at the inflation numbers, especially if we look at the goods component of the consumer basket of goods and services, we don't see much evidence of inflation. And so that tells us, even though we had that trade war last year, it's not really hitting consumers to a very significant degree. And that's because, first of all, the price tag of the trade war was about $33 billion. That sounds like a big number, but remember, we're a $20 trillion economy. So actually, $33 billion is pocket change in the grand scheme of things. The other thing is that China weakened their currency to help offset the impact of the tariffs. And so the pass-through has been much smaller than a lot of folks anticipated in the heat of the battle last year. So not much evidence of trade war there. It doesn't mean it's not a negative for the economy. It's just not nearly as negative as many people were expecting.
Carl Riccadonna, the chief U.S. economist for Bloomberg in New York. Carl, always a pleasure to get your perspective. Coming up, strategies to maximize your tax refund.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The latest IRS data show that U.S. taxpayers received tax refunds amounting to $322 billion last year. Let's talk about the best ways to use that money should you be on the receiving end this year. We're joined by Craig Bolanos, who is the founding partner and leading executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour, Craig. So a lot of us just kind of want to walk out with our money and do something with it right now. How can we restrain ourselves and get even more money?
Well, I tell you what, you're absolutely right. It is so tempting to cash those refund checks. Americans are in love with their tax refund. But what I think about here in the Chicagoland area is everybody just came back from spring break. And I know a lot of people underwrote part of their spring break vacation on their credit card. And I can think of no greater use for that tax refund than to get out of debt, because you can never, ever, ever consistently out-invest those credit card interest rates. So I want you to take that refund and pay off the credit cards. And once that's done, then we got to focus on step number two.
The given the average refund was $2,899 per taxpayer in 2018. What if you take that amount of money, what can we do with it?
Well, you know what? After we've paid off the credit card, I think what we got to do is we got to look and say, what created the credit card balance in the first place? And what created the credit card balance is that nobody has an emergency fund. So if we don't have any credit card debt, or we have the credit, or we have money left over from the refund, I want to challenge all of our listeners to make sure they have that emergency fund, because once they have that established, that's going to keep them off the credit card debt in the first place. And if we've got the emergency fund done, if we don't have any credit card debt, then why not take all those sincere and actionable ideas from the Noon Business Hour and let's start putting them into play, meaning let's open up a brokerage account, let's fund an IRA, and start investing for our long-term future security.
Craig, let's go back to credit card debt for a second. Can you just kind of give us a nuts and bolts example of how, if you apply your refund, either part or all of it, to your credit card debt, how in the long run you're going to save and how much you're going to save?
Oh, you know what? I can't do the gymnastics because they're so astonishing. But what I just challenge people is, if you have $3,000 sitting on a credit card, then every single month, odds are you're literally financing about $50 a month of interest, $600 a year. And all that I think about is this: what could you be doing with that $50 a month or $600 a year of interest that you're paying? You could be funding an IRA, you could be funding college, and if you just go online and use a simple calculator, those savings aren't just worth hundreds, they are worth tens of thousands over people's lifetime, and that's why we've got to pay that credit card debt down to zero.
Craig Bolano is the founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. Always great to get your perspective. Still ahead on Personal Finance Wednesday, answering the most asked questions about ways to save.
WBBM News Time 1225. Business news is sponsored by Baird, and here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow is lower by just 10 points now. We're at 26,140, and the NASDAQ remains higher by 34 points, a gain of almost 0.5%. The S&P is advancing 0.2% or 6 points, and the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is up almost 1%. A deluge of metal is coming to the market, analysts say, and that's got steel companies under the gun on Wall Street. U.S. Steel is sliding 3%. The company says the coming years will create a steel sheet tsunami. Crude oil futures are higher on diminished supply, so futures right now trading to $64.60 a barrel. Let's check in on the grain markets. For that, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had a little movement today on the grains. July corn's up 1.25. December's up 0.5. And the beans, July beans up 2 at 9.13.75. November's up 1.5. And we do have July wheat down 2.75, 4.61. Corn and beans up a hair, wheat down a hair. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Welcome to the second half of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Along with Chris Kreidel, I'm Jim Gutis, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Stocks are mixed at this hour. We'll see what's moving the markets. In Personal Finance Wednesday, finding ways to save, even when money's tight. The emergence of the cashless store and restaurant is raising questions about economic discrimination. The Chicago City Council approves tax incentives for the 78 development in the South Loop and the Lincoln Yards project on the north side. On the WBBM Market Watch, the Dow is down 12, the S&P 500 up 6, and the NASDAQ's ahead by 35 points. We've got rain moving into the Chicago area. We're going to have a high of 42. We'll have windy conditions tonight with a shower or two, a low of 37. Right now, under cloudy skies, it's 38 at O'Hare. WBBM News Time, 12:31. It's a mixed bag on Wall Street so far today, and we're joined by Jim Awad, the Senior Managing Director at Clearstead Advisors in New York. So, Jim, let's talk about what's moving the markets today.
Yeah, well, today is quiet, but they're waiting for two events. One is the Fed minutes, and I expect no surprise out of that. I think the Fed is on hold for the foreseeable future, and I don't think anything in the minutes is going to move stock prices one or the other. The second is earnings season begins very shortly. And I would expect that expectations came down so much for first quarter earnings during the December meltdown in stocks, and expectations are so low and business is good enough that the earnings season is going to be a little bit better than expected. And then the economy is doing just fine. Of course, it's slowing from abnormally high growth last year, but it's slowing to a sustainable rate. And while there are always plenty of risk to worry about, I suspect that the earnings picture is going to be good enough to allow stocks to make somewhat more progress. You know, you're up 15% so far this year, so you can't expect a huge gain from here. But with the Fed on hold, with the economy growing, earnings growing, the likelihood that they'll get something done in China, that he's going to back off the trade dispute with the EU, and the fact that it looks like we're not going to go through impeachment hearings, I think we have a reasonably benign outlook.
Jim, let's look at the Fed minutes a little bit more and what you expect to see and maybe what you'd like to see out of those Fed minutes.
Well, what I expect to see is what I'd like to see, which is an acknowledgement that the economy is slowing somewhat but still growing at a sustainable rate, and that the Fed is data dependent, and I don't think they're going to give any inclinations about whether the next move is up or down, although I personally suspect that there might be one more move up before this economic cycle is over. And I think it's really going to be very plain but vanilla. They're not going to say anything additional about the balance sheet shrinkage. I think they're going to try to do no harm, and I think they will do no harm.
Let's also take a look at earnings season and talk a little bit about what we can expect coming up with that.
Yeah, well, the expectation is that earnings are going to be down a few percent. Revenues up a little bit, but earnings down a few percent. And I wouldn't be surprised if you come in with flat earnings. And the most important thing is going to be the forward-looking guidance. There was, as I said, there was plenty to worry about at the end of last year. Most of those risks have receded somewhat. So I think what you're going to see, not universally, it's going to be company by company, industry by industry, but I think you're going to see a reasonably favorable going forward outlook in terms of corporations, which I believe should allow for earnings to grow, you know, 5-6% this year, which would bring you into $170 per share in S&P earnings. And that would put you at about 17 times earnings, which is you know, fair value, not compellingly cheap, but certainly not expensive given how low interest rates are. And so if you hold the PE, the valuation level, constant through the end of the year, and earnings can grow 5 or 6%, that might give you another 5 or 6% in stock prices. To expect more, I think, is ambitious when you've got 15% so far.
Well, Jim, are you worried about anything? What concerns you?
Yeah, you know, things could, you could get a negative surprise out of Washington. There's a lot of acrimony down there, although at the moment it seems to be a low-level grinding headache rather than a splitting headache. You could get a no-deal Brexit, but I think the EU is going to give Britain the breathing room that it needs to figure out what it wants to do. And then, of course, the big risk is that the China talks collapsed, like the Korean talks collapsed, and that would be a big no-no. That would, I think, could erase a lot of the gains for the year if that happens. But Trump's running for re-election. He wants a good economy. He wants a good stock market. So I suspect he's going to bend over backwards to get a deal where he can declare victory.
All right, Jim. Nice to talk with you again, as always. Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Clearstead Advisors in New York. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to make saving a priority.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Google has compiled a list of the most asked questions about saving. So let's get some of the answers to some of those key questions from Liz Weston, the columnist for NerdWallet, and author of the books Your Credit Score, the fifth edition, and Deal with Your Debt out of Los Angeles. So, Liz, let's talk about what are the most common questions and what are the best answers.
Well, a lot of the people who are making these searches are looking for information about how to save for a down payment. Some are asking how to save for a wedding, how to save for a vacation, how to save for retirement's pretty popular. These are all fairly big amounts, so people need a little help in figuring out how to do it.
What is the best thing that someone can do right now? And I guess it all depends on age, but what's some of the best advice for being able to put a little bit more away to help boost your savings, to make sure that you are saving enough?
You may have already heard this phrase, but it's pay yourself first. And what that means is set up the savings plan before you pay everything else. That means making it automatic, so you're not making a decision every month about whether to save or not, or every paycheck whether to save or not. Just take it out of your own hands and set it up to do it automatically. So if you're saving for a house down payment, for example, maybe set up a separate savings account for that. Online banks will allow you to set up a virtually unlimited number of sub-accounts or savings accounts. You can put a label on it so you know what it's for. It's really a lot harder to dip into my home fund, for example, than just some random savings account. So label it so it's on your mind. This is what it's for. And it's a little bit out of your, you know, if it's at another bank or an online bank, it's a little bit out of your mainstream. You're not seeing that money in your with your other checking and savings account. So it's a little easier to keep your hands off it. And then set up those automatic payments. So they're going in there every single month, maybe even every single week, so the money can accumulate over time.
Well, one of the big categories here is a child's education in college. What's the best way to save for that and to use it wisely?
You know, for a lot of parents, the best way to save for that is going to be a 529 college savings plan. If you get a state tax break for contributing to the one in your state, that probably should be the one that you choose. Your money is allowed to grow tax deferred, and if you use it for education, it's tax free. It doesn't hurt any need-based financial aid that much, so it's a really good option for a lot of families. I think actually I have a little soapbox here about college savings is, you know, don't let your kid choose a college that's going to bankrupt you. A lot of parents do. They let their kids go off to that dream school. So that's even more important than putting money aside, but saving is really important.
So after the kid's college, then there's the question about a home or an apartment, and then, you know, retirement at 40. Where do we start?
Well, I personally would prioritize retirement because that's going to be your most expensive goal, and it's going to take you a long time to save for it. So don't wait. Don't put it off. There's also pretty good statistics that people's income starts to plateau and even decline in their 50s. So don't put it off thinking, oh, when the kids are out of the house, then I'll be able to super save for retirement. You know, life happens. So start saving now. Start saving what you can. Get those company matches if you've got them and start bumping it up just a little bit every time you get a raise, and perhaps every year, maybe even every quarter, because you can get used to those small increments, you know, a little bit less in your paycheck over time, even if you can't do it all at once.
Liz, I want to circle back to something you said that I found interesting, because a lot of people think they have to pay down their obligations, like their credit card bills or something like that, first before they start saving. You're kind of saying, you know, you need to do them concurrently. Get something going in savings at the same time you're trying to pay down obligations like credit card debt.
Exactly. If you have a company match at work, that is a no-brainer. That's free money. It's like 100%, 50%, 100% return on whatever you put in there. So you got to do that. Even if you don't have a retirement plan at work that offers a match, just getting in the habit of putting something aside is really, really important. You can step it up after you've paid off those credit cards. But don't wait until you're absolutely debt-free, and certainly don't wait until after you paid your student loans or your mortgage or whatever else. Really, it takes a long time to accumulate enough money to sustain you in retirement. You need to get started now.
Liz Weston, the columnist for NerdWallet and author of the books Your Credit Score, the fifth edition, and Deal With Your Debt out of Los Angeles. Always great to talk to you about ways to improve our finances. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, why there's backlash against cashless stores and restaurants.
Information you can bank on. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Amazon is announcing that it will accept cash at all of its bookstore and Go locations. And we're talking with Krista Gmelik, who is reporter at Bloomberg in New York. Krista, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. Explain to us the story that we've been watching and the controversy over this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You're right. Amazon confirmed today reports that it's working to accept cash at all Amazon Go locations. Right now, there's only 10 locations, but I think, you know, we've reported that the company eventually wants to open up as many as 3,000. And so really, Amazon Go is part of this really ambitious effort to change the way people shop. But at the same time, all around the country, legislators are worried about, well, if Amazon Go and other retailers follow suit in not accepting cash, then people who are unbanked or underbanked won't be able to buy goods and services at those locations. And so you're seeing, you know, New Jersey, Philadelphia, both passing laws that are essentially banning these cashless stores. And so that's really why Amazon Go or Amazon's decision to accept cash at Amazon Go is really so interesting.
Well, so yeah, it's interesting because that it you know is requiring politicians and you know there have been people who have been demonstrating. It's very interesting the way it's been kind of accepted around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm based here in New York. There's legislation being considered by the city council here. San Francisco is also considering a ban. So I mean, it's really all over the country. And while there are, you know, I think the vast majority of stores still accept cash. But I think the thought process is and was that if entities like Amazon come in and open up Amazon Go, which don't accept cash, and other retailers, again, follow suit, then it could become a much larger problem for people who don't have access to credit and debit cards.
Krista, let's talk a little bit about why in the past cash was king. If you had cash, everybody wanted you. Let's talk a little bit more about why some retailers like Amazon and others have decided or had decided that at one point they thought a cashless model was the best model.
I think it really comes down to efficiency with Amazon Go and then also with other retailers, because there are, you know, a handful of restaurants and other retailers around the country that don't accept cash currently. And again, it comes down to efficiency. People don't have to wait in as long of a line because, you know, when you get up to the cash register, you don't have to take the time to count out, you know, whatever amount is due, and the cashier doesn't have to make change. Also, security reasons. You know, advocates of these cashless stores say, well, theft is less likely, physical theft at least. So, you know, there's a variety of reasons, but efficiency and I think security are two of the biggest.
Krista Gumelik, who is the reporter at Bloomberg in New York, joining us to talk about cashless stores and Amazon's decision to start taking cash at Amazon Go. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. We'll check the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. It's time now to take a look at today's business news powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. And here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, as Boeing has pared losses today, it's down just 0.2%. Now the Dow has come back from deeper losses as well, and the blue chips are lower by just 7 points. The Nasdaq is up 0.5% or 39 points, and the S&P is gaining 0.25% or 7 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg up 0.75%. A bill has been introduced that would expand the electric vehicle tax credit, doubling the number of cars that would be eligible for the credit. That would give a boost to Tesla and GM, and their shares are heading higher today. The bipartisan proposal has backing from automakers, environmental groups, and others, but is expected to face opposition from the White House. The Trump administration has argued getting rid of the EV tax credit would save the government $2.5 billion over a decade. Stock in Levi Strauss is headed higher, up almost 5%. The company posted its first earnings report since going public last month, and in that, Levi said sales in the Americas jumped 9%. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.